Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7 on this extended show, because we're taking in Ireland versus France with updates and analysis from Brent Pope and Fiona Hayes later on. But now it's football between now and 4 o'clock, a bit earlier this week. Remember our coverage brought to you by Sky. Don't miss Newcastle versus Aston Villa on Super Sunday live only on Sky Sports. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation. You can listen on News Talk, also watch us on the digital and social channels for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook and on the OTB Sports app. We're joined by the former Republic of Ireland international and European Cup winner with Liverpool, Mark Lawrenson, football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonnell, and the broadcaster and journalist, Johnny Ward, to talk about the beautiful game. Manchester United won, Southampton won in the Premier League at Old Trafford, 73 minutes on the watch. Jadon Sancho with the second Premier League goal of the season in the first half, but Southampton equalising through Shea Adams in the second half, his second goal in as many games. And Johnny, this happened against Burnley, United going ahead, looking comfortable enough, and then conceding.
Yeah, they were good in the first half, JD. Pogba, I thought, had a really, really good game, and they were well worthy of their lead. It's a very good game. Some of these early games can be a bit dead, but there have been plenty of chances. There's frailties at the back, though, that were evident during the week, JD, are still there, and Southampton have kind of been worthy of coming back into the game after the Adams goal. Have actually looked like they might get a second. It's a big game for Man United, this. You know, they're definitely vulnerable in that fourth place gap, and long run. It's one of Ronaldo's longest runs now without a goal. He's just had one chalked off justifiably for offside, but I don't see this finishing one all the way it is. I think there are going to be a lot more chances in the game. It's been very entertaining, but I think what Shane Keegan said not that long ago about regardless of who are managing United, their players probably aren't good enough for them to be much better than they are. It's kind of been borne out week to week here.
We're going to come back to United between now and 3 o'clock, obviously, as we watch this with Laro and Dan and Johnny. You're speaking of entertaining there, Johnny. And last night we had the President's Cup. We had Shamrock Rovers beating St Pat's on penalties. We're going to get League of Ireland predictions from the lads later on, ahead of the new season next weekend. But first, we're going to bring you a golden moment from Johnny's FAI TV interview with the Shelburne manager, Damien Duff, ahead of the new season.
Like I said, first and foremost, it's just to stabilise the club and stay in the Premier Division.
Yeah, that's Damien Duff, manager of Shells this season. Himself and Joey O'Brien trying to bring Shells back to the top. As Damien says, a sleeping joint. They start the season against St Patrick's.
On a joint, not a sleeping joint. A joint.
Actually, yeah, and that's a fair point to me.
No, yeah, it is. And it was. I guess it's fresh in my mind, because it's what I was trying to tell the players last night. You know, last week we did a little presentation and, you know, first division clubs think they can come up and dip their toe in the water and see how they go and go under the radar for 10 games. That's not the case with Shelburne FC. There's a lot of eyes on them, there's a lot of pressure on them. They have to fill the jersey, and like I said, it's not a sleeping joint, it's a joint.
I will learn not to paraphrase Damien Duff in the future. St Patrick's Athletic versus Shells Friday week at Tolka Park.
Johnny, I think I watched that about 100 times last night.
I'm conscious, JD, that like some people are listening to this, so they can't see the pictures as well. And like, you have to add the pictures as well, because, you know, Damien Duff and Johnny are sort of turning to camera at the end. And like, Damien Duff probably goes through that thing that I'd imagine a lot of people that are interviewed go through, where whoever, you know, the Jeff Shreves figure, whoever it is, says something that they probably don't agree with. And other people will probably just suck it in and go afterwards, you know. But he just decides to interrupt mid-interview, and then Johnny comes back with another question at him, and it's a great dynamic.
There was no double take, there was no flinching from Johnny. It was a perfect pirouette. It was like something out of figure skating, like a triple salco back into Damien Duff. It was joint.
Yeah, talking about
80,000 views, Johnny, on Darren Cleary's Twitter page alone in the last 24 hours.
See, the thing is, and Dan will relate to this, like, Damien Duff doesn't like giving interviews, but when he does, he can talk. And like, most people would have just given up at that stage. Like, we're at the level now where there was this guy sent to me by actually a former League of Ireland player, a guy called Hud Hastings on Twitter, who actually found a clip where Damien Duff calls Shell as a sleeping giant. Now, it wasn't presumably during our interview, but your man Hud Hastings has now changed his name to Sleeping Giant Reed. Which, it's just like, it's a bit mad. But a lot of people have reacted and said, I'm not sure Damien Duff's going to last in this job if that's the way he reacts. And
who cares how he reacts?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant, but I just thought like,
it wasn't rude. He just corrected you. Like, it's unusual for somebody to correct somebody in an interview like that, but it wasn't rude.
Well, do you know what the funny thing was, JD? Like, I did a lot of interviews that day, and like some of the first division players, I wouldn't necessarily be fully sure who they were. Some of the smaller kind of clubs, and then you've Damien Duff at the end, and he was the last interview because I think he'd initially gone to the wrong location or whatever, and I made a joke about that at Startham, and he didn't really like that either. And I tried to shake his hand, and he was the only person who wouldn't shake my hand because he said, well, there's a bit of COVID going around. So I was like, God, this is some start here before we've even interviewed him. And then as I interviewed him, it was striking afterwards that I actually don't remember a single word he said in the 7 minutes. And that just tells that I was obviously a little bit like rattled or something.
Starstruck.
Because the same talk apart thing.
But we know, Johnny, that Damien Duff isn't especially enamoured with the FAI. And he is told that you're like from FAI TV. He basically sees you as you're like an establishment figure. Like, this is the big development now that you were working for the FAI at the launch. And I mean, he has had issues with the FAI. He comes
in. Never thought about that.
The first thing he's told is he has to speak to the FAI. And the FAI guy, as you are now, actually, in his eyes, is taking his quotes out of context, or so he believes. And he's like, this is it. So,
when did I become the face of the FAI?
Well, I mean, when you took their money to appear at the launch.
I haven't taken it yet.
And now you've gone viral, Johnny. I was looking through virals of you, Laro, and there was one I found around the Oxford job when you're in this incredible coat. There's a brilliant jacket, and you were escaping the paparazzi, and then you try to push a door of a pub open.
The boozer was closed.
The boozer was closed. Have you seen that on Twitter or any of the social media channels, Laro?
Listen, I saw it that night because it was on. Remember when Trevor, what was his name, the black news presenter on ITV?
Trevor McDonald.
Yeah.
Trevor McDonald, yeah. I was going to say Trevor McDougall. I knew that was wrong. Trevor McDonald. And they used to have this thing right at the end, about 25 past 10, just before the going off air, called, I can't remember, even remember what it was called, and look at, you know, this. The funny thing basically was, and it was me in my coat. It wasn't a jacket, it was a coat. It was an expensive coat, by the way, Doug. And I was trying to get in this pub because what happened was Maxwell had sacked me, basically, and I'd been escorted out of the building. Can you believe that, with these two, like, 6'8" fellas? What am I going to do, nick some newspapers or something? And this was obviously at the Mirror offices. Escorted out the building, out the side door. I'd never been out the side door before. And there was all these cameramen outside. And I thought, he's set me up. He's absolutely set me up. So I walk out and I just think, there's a pub across the road. And I'll never forget, it was about 10 to 12, obviously in the morning, and I just went to push the door open thinking, I'm in here and I've escaped. It was locked. And of course, what you do is you turn around and you think, what am I going to do? And then that's where they got all the pictures from, and that's where Trevor got, obviously, you know. And finally, have you heard about the football manager who couldn't even get a drink after you were sacked?
It was like Laro channeling his inner with Neil and I, JD. It's like a sketch out of that.
Hey, JD, by the way, I'm a bit worried about you. How many times did you say you watched the Johnny thing last night?
I know.
It was absolutely hilarious. Well,
you need to get a life.
But I don't have one because I speak to you, Laro, every Saturday.
Well, I know. That probably makes it worse, we know. But 80,000? Have you not got Netflix or something?
To be clear, John Duggan is not responsible for all 80,000 of those views. He's only,
he's only 100 of them. Only 100.
Down to 80 to 100. But
funny. Funny.
Yeah, it is a bit mad, all right. But yeah, Duffer isn't on social media, so he hasn't seen it yet anyway.
I'm sure he has seen it.
That's the first time I've ever heard him speak.
It's interesting, Laro, because he does have an air about him. I've never really met Roy Keane properly, and I imagine you're kind of slightly mesmerised by his presence. But there was a bit of that about Duff as well, I think. And it was like everyone who was at the kind of the launch, they all just seemed to shut up and listen to him around that time, even though he was kind of the last one there. He definitely has a presence.
Yeah. Good. Great. Well, that'll help him, won't it? Mm.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was down watching him last night in Cork, and he was actually quite measured on the sideline. But the thing that people are going to enjoy, I think, watching is he's incredibly animated on the sideline. And that's, I mean, he's been managing here at underage level for the last couple of years.
And people wouldn't have expected that from the TV persona, because the TV persona is very laid back.
Do you remember when Duff was a player and there was this whole thing about, oh,
sleeping.
He loves to sleep,
yeah.
And he had this sort of way of, like, you know, the red face, even, you know, after 5 minutes, and then he'd just keep going, and he'd have this whole thing about Duff. But actually, he's a very intense and sort of serious person when it comes to his work. And I mean, that is the thing from speaking to people who would have worked closely with him at underage level when he got the job. They were like, this is going to be this is going to be intense. And certainly from speaking to people who were up at sort of one or two of the pre-season games, closed doors ones, you know, sprinting down the sideline at decisions, just very a sort of force of nature, I suppose, or certainly that's maybe the wrong way of phrasing it, but just really like loud and in your face. Now, obviously, last night it wasn't quite like that, but it is one of these people that I think people are kind of drawn to him a bit and are very interested to see how he fares in this job.
And they're like, sorry, go ahead, Laura.
No, well, just on the Duffer thing, I do remember when I spoke to him, and it was like one line, and I was at Chelsea versus, I can't remember who they were playing, and he was obviously playing, and Mourinho was a manager, and there was him on one wing and Ian Robin on the other, and he was kind of walking past, and he said hello to one of the journalists, because he used to have to come past the journalists before they got in the dressing room at Stamford Bridge. And I just said, hi, how are you doing? And all that. And he said, well, should I be all right? He said, if the manager would let me and Ian Robin go over the halfway line.
he's very witty. Like, I mean, if Duff realised that, like, I love coffee, I love the South France, I love red wine, South France, I love all these things that he apparently likes, maybe if he didn't see me as an FAI employee, it would be different. But why did he make a point of the sleeping giant difference to giant? Because it's almost like he's saying, well, Shells are going to be good, or we're a big club, like, we have to have high standards here. Because Shells, like, I don't know, Dan, what you met them last night, but, like, there's no guarantee they'll have a great season by any means.
I think he's just, like...
He's playing a bit of a game
there, and he's just like trying to get people into the mindset of thinking.
Everybody's bought into it. Everybody is watching this thing, and that can be only a good thing.
Yeah, and people, as you said, people are renaming them. Like the giant sleeping giant clip. You are right. There is a previous interview where he did use the phrase sleeping giant. So he's upgraded. They've woken up since that interview.
We're delighted as well to have Shelburne as our partners here at OTV.
Are you the official sleeping giant partner?
No, we're the official partners of Shelburne, and we're thrilled to be a part of that as well. So, Laura, how could your mate have got it so wrong this week, David Moyes? How could he have read the room so wrong?
Don't know. I think he was blinded by the fact he thought, you know, what it was Watford at home, wasn't it? And he badly needed it. Well, he badly needed a win, but obviously he wanted to win. And I think he's got it spectacularly wrong, to be honest with you. And as they say, with every action, there's a reaction. And boy, has there been a reaction. So... It was a strange one, wasn't it? And if you'd actually thought about it and then flipped it on his head a little bit, you'd kind of think, well, even if you wanted to play him, it's not as though they were playing Man City. So it's Watford. So you're probably thinking, well, let's put somebody else in there anyway. And it would probably, well, I'm going to say probably, it wouldn't have been anything like as bad as it's been.
No.
As it, the kind of fallout from that.
Because,
and, you know, no matter. 2 weeks' wages, that old kind of thing, and you know, he's a Moyes is a dog lover, pet lover, all that kind of stuff, and what have you thing. People just aren't having it, are they?
No, because if he could have taken himself out of the situation by saying, look, we have to, you know, we can't play for Kurt Zouma at the moment until this process is finished. Yeah. He gets the fine, the club punish him. Everybody would have understood that, and then Moyes is completely in the clear. Now it looks like there's just complete cynicism, and this is just another example of the soulless nature of football and the fact that it's completely detached from what's going on in society.
Yeah.
This is animal cruelty. And also, I don't know what to say.
And I mean, the other thing with that as well, it would have been something else by now, would it not? Do you know what I mean? In football, that's what happens.
Well, it's now, is he going to play tomorrow when he's defending him yesterday at the press conference, and the story runs on and runs on? We got a text in here from Dan in Kilkenny. Kurt Zouma is a great footballer, but he's a shameful excuse as a person. I've supported West Ham since the 70s, but if he plays again, that's me gone.
Well, he's only got one thing wrong, that fella. He's not a great footballer. He's decent.
I think the interesting thing about it as well, you see it was reported subsequently that some of the other West Ham players, it's sort of a side angle to this, that I'm not sure, it's one of these things that like a player has been fined 2 weeks' wages and maybe people aren't 100% sure, or there's information on what it is, and then it sort of emerged, it's 125 grand a week. So other players apparently weren't aware or a myth, but the idea that Zouma has been paid that much. So there's a whole sort of side angle. I think it was in the Mail this was reported, and it would have been reported by a journalist who would have a decent record for West Ham stories, I would say. So it's just like another, I mean, not to sort of trivialise the whole broader matter, of course, but that, I mean, this is for Kurt Zouma, there's implications that you might not have anticipated when this all happened initially.
How would you not know?
Was he not on a free though?
Yeah, well, so as a result, he gets higher wages because there was no fee. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Yeah. I see, that's a very reasonable way of looking at it, but are other players sitting in the dressing room, you know, who might feel they're doing more, going to look at it that way? That does explain, that's a fair point in terms of how that happens, but yeah.
You're responsible for your own contract. No, nobody makes you sign with the pen, do they?
Yeah.
Harry Maguire is so poor here, JD. He is so poor. He's just caught out so badly down the left and then sort of runs into the box and, like, just manhandles. I'm not sure who the Southampton player is.
Right.
And he's just come in and I don't know if this is going to go to VAR, but he's just barged him out of the way pretty much.
Yeah, that is on the borderline.
After losing the ball, he was like a guy who'd been out like last night, the way he was trying to defend there. It's really, really poor. I don't know what's happened to him, but I don't have the audio here. I don't know what's going on exactly, but he could be in a little bit of hot water.
And Roy has got injured now in the collision. 1-1 between Man United and Southampton, 88 minutes on the watch here at Old Trafford. Will this go away for David Moyes? Like, he just can't disappear now. That's the thing, Laura, isn't it?
Well, it will. It will, but it's just going to be a matter of time because I think, as I said before, something will happen.
Ooh, he trod on his leg. Harry Maguire trod on Brody.
I think that might be a penalty, lads.
Yeah, he couldn't be more awkward if he tried. And then, as you say, JD, he stood on his leg. I don't think there's any malice there. I just think he's so awkward at the moment he doesn't know what's going on. That should be a penalty to me.
He's now got two speeds, slower and slower.
Mm.
Did you see that?
By the way, that Breuer boy,
yeah,
he looks a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah, Chelsea, obviously.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so he...
Breuer's kind of like... He's
got physical presence.
Gotten away with this. But you can imagine Maguire is thinking that I want the ground swallowed me up here, JD, because you can imagine the headlines if this were given as a penalty, which I think it possibly should have been.
I don't know. Yeah, it looks like they're looking, getting ready to play on here, I think, aren't they?
It'd be a big piece of ground to swallow him up.
But I see. Yeah. I mean, Maguire, the extra time in the cup match recently against Middlesbrough, I mean, a couple of them were completely paddling as well. He has got away with it. Yeah, they've restarted.
Wow.
They've restarted, so... That one, we'll probably see that one again later on being discussed, I think. You know, I know it's hard for people who maybe aren't seeing it. Like, I can see maybe the initial contact probably wasn't a foul, but the fact he's sort of stood in them afterwards. Yeah.
It's set to be no win in three now for Manchester United. And go on.
What is happening in that dressing room?
Well, that's it. Like, half time against Burnley, they're 1-0 up. You think, what are the messages at half time? What are the messages at half time today? Once again, they're 1-0 up.
Yeah. Well. But also, just the players. You just wonder if one or two of them who aren't happy for whatever reasons, they're looking at it and thinking, well, this fella's going in May, so you know, can't be arsed. Basically, it doesn't affect anyone. It doesn't affect your contract or anything like that. And if you're in and out of the team, they're going well. So I just get this impression that they're going out and they're playing. But they're actually not playing for the manager. I think seems to be, for me, a majority of them just seem to be playing for themselves. It's the only way I can try and work this out, because if you watch them play, they haven't played, as far as I'm concerned, a really good 90-plus minutes. You might have... It seems the pattern seems to be good first half, and then second half, they fall away. So you're thinking, are they not fit? Are they not doing this? But I think there are certain people in there, and it's like, I'm not bothered. He's going. We'll have a new manager and that'll be completely different.
Yeah, I mean, they've conceded in the 47th minute, I think, in the last couple of games as well. So, yeah. Like, they've had their half-time
talk.
And then they're not coming back out in that sort of, you know, in that right headspace for whatever reason, which probably does point to what Laura might be alluding to there. I think there's something... I know they'd come back off a break. I was just struck in that Middlesbrough game. I know there were a few players who were involved who maybe hadn't been involved that much. But just the basic conditioning and fitness, you kind of wonder, you know. It just didn't look like they were in great shape. But you see the stuff during the week that the players aren't impressed, it would appear. And again, we're always hearing about what the players of Manchester United feel.
That we're hearing is not this good thing either, is it?
No. We've had this discussion before, I think. Like, it's the volume of stuff coming out of the dressing room, to me, from the media perspective, it seems like a dream. That there's information coming
everywhere. Pochettino stuff during the week.
Like, there's so much coming. Yeah. Out from somewhere, and it can't just be like one place. It has to be multiple places. But that they're very unimpressed with the coach who'd come from
Chris Armas, Toronto.
Toronto,
yeah.
Who I remember when he was appointed, and
nearly scored United, and it was actually Maguire.
Maguire was actually a very good save.
It just shows what we know, doesn't it?
Yeah,
he's been listening.
You can take that off the podcast, lads. If you can.
Yeah.
It was actually a good save, but that's just another thing. I remember he was appointed. He's one of the Red Bull people. He's on the sort of Red Bull circuit. And actually, Kev Kilvan had mentioned, because he's obviously working over there, that he'd been sacked in Toronto and hadn't impressed people at all. And all of a sudden, they're looking at it there, watching this guy coming from Toronto, an average MLS team, going in to be the first team coach, effectively, at Manchester United, and thinking, what's going on here? It's probably a bit of a red flag, all right, you know?
Does he know Ranić or something? Or
yeah, yeah, it's a Red Bull connection, I think, Laura. I think obviously the Red Bull operation is sort of has its global wings, if you know, and it has the various.
Excuse the pun.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. That was actually, yeah. I meant that. Like they have Salzburg, and Ranić has had connections with a couple of those clubs, and that's where this connection came from, I think.
See, at the end
wait till you get Pochettino and Roy in together, that'll be interesting.
Well, if at the end of the season they don't make the top four, which the moment is more likely than not that they don't make the top four, you'll have had, like, what would you have then? Five successive managers that would have been deemed more or less failures. So where are they going as a club?
Good question.
Is Pochettino the right man, Laura?
Yeah, well, I think who else is there? Yeah, I think so. I think what he did at Southampton, and he was revolutionary at Southampton, certainly, and also what he did at Tottenham. Yes, yeah, I think so. I mean, they should have basically just done everything they possibly could just to get him in, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
You know, why this is Manchester United we're talking about. Why would you wait? And I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have bought some of the duffers that they have bought in the meantime.
Well, I think with PSG there was issues there, but it feels as if his future doesn't lie with PSG long term, and
no,
possibly the summer could be the time.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem a good fit, and I think it's one of those unwritten things that everyone knows is that he'll be gone in the summer, won't he, regardless.
Yeah, yeah, he will be.
Complex job to take over, though.
Yeah.
If you're talking about six managers in a row, if I'm counting right, who would leave it kind of feeling that, you know, with a lot of regrets. It's not as simple. Like, you obviously have those big figures in the dressing room who are underperforming. Maguire's name, but one. Pogba's obviously going to be a difficult situation. There's Ronaldo there. A lot of tough decisions to be made before you even turn them into a functioning team.
Well, yeah. It's not going to be Rangnick anyway, and I don't know what his role will be going forward.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm serious, and I know he's my mate. If they'd have left Moyes in charge, it'd have been a different team.
Well, you're probably right, Laura. Like, he was, what did he get, 8 months?
Yeah, just about. But, you know, if you look at him, he builds teams. That's what he does, and they needed rebuilding, didn't they?
Is the lack of trophies, though, Laro? He doesn't win trophies, you know?
Well, they're not winning any anyway now, John, are they?
Yeah, he doesn't win trophies, JD, but he's been in charge of, like, Everton and West Ham. I mean,
look, in hindsight, it was always the
gravitas.
The hardest time was replacing, stating the obvious, like, replacing Ferguson was always the hardest game.
Yeah.
I think Pochettino will probably get a bit of leeway, because at Spurs he has built something. He had a reputation for working with young
and
players.
And punching way above.
Working with young players as well, a bit more wedded to the Manchester United sort of perception of what they want from a manager. So
full time.
I think people will understand if he went there and it didn't quite happen straight away. Whereas we go with Mourinho, you're going for like an impact appointment. You know, it's more of a Manchester United appointment, Pochettino, definitely.
Yeah, and it's finished Manchester United 1, Southampton 1 at Old Trafford. Jadon Sancho with the goal in the first half for the Red Devils, cancelled out by Shea Adams in the second half, and only a point, and no wins for United now in three. So look, I don't know.
And this is my name dropping bit now, John. Sorry to cut in, but you know when Sir Matt Busby obviously retired at Manchester United
in the early 70s, yeah.
Yeah, and they struggled to get managers in, etc. Wolf McGuinness and all those kind of things, Franco Farrell and stuff. I remember when I was at Preston with Sir Bobby. Just I wasn't in this conversation, but I was like hearing it and everything. And he said one of the problems that he thought why it took them so long to get back was that Sir Matt Busby still had an office in the ground. And you went to see the manager, whoever he was, Wilf McGuinness, Franco Farrell, or if you weren't happy, you went to see the big boss, which was still Sir Matt.
Yeah, there were famous stories about how O'Farrell was so undermined by that, Laura. And as you say, the office was still there. And there were obvious echoes of that, where that's what now looks an almost, if not disastrous, like bad move to bring in Ronaldo, obviously went back to Sir Alex, hoping that if Ronaldo went to Man City, Man United would have been far better off. And I don't know if that were ever a runner, but it just doesn't look a good fit at the moment.
No, it doesn't.
And they failed to grasp fourth. They're still fifth after playing 24 games, 40 points United, also 24 and 40 for West Ham. Arsenal played two games less and are only a point behind United. So Arsenal played 22 games and on 39 points. Spurs played 21 games around 36 points. So if they all won their games in hand, it'd be an Arsenal-Spurs situation ahead of West Ham and Manchester United, but you know,
it's hard to see it at the moment, JD. It's hard to see them finish in the top four. It really, really is, because they haven't improved under Rangnick and they need other teams to kind of stop the progress that they're making. It looks pretty sick at the moment, that dressing room.
Manchester United fans, 53106, what you think? We'll hear from Ralph Rangnick and we'll probably hear some extreme honesty after the game. That's all we seem to get from him every single week. I don't know if that's even an issue itself. Arsenal, there is always a joke, Laro, about Arsenal, but to me, they're the team of all the teams that might lack a bit of firepower, although Aubameyang wasn't producing anyway. But I'm looking here, seven games in the Premier League, five wins, one defeat, one unlucky loss to Man City. They might be the team.
Yeah, quite possibly. Well, we know that they go on runs. I mean, you know, we always say same old Arsenal. That they go on runs and win six or seven games on the spin. But then again, they'll go somewhere and lose a game where you think, what on earth's happened to them? They've still got that about them. I think generally Arteta's done a good job. And I think getting rid of Aubameyang, as we've spoken before, I think that's an absolute coup, to be honest with you. Because I think we talk about Manchester United and their dressing room. It looks now like Arsenal have got a good dressing room. You know, they signed one or two decent players and defensively as well. We know about all the young lads that they've got. And of course, when you first come in the team, you play with absolutely no fear whatsoever. You don't even think about what you're doing. You just do it naturally. And it looks like it's, you know, a really, really well-run club. Apart from the fact that I'm not sure about bringing players in. Is Edu still there? Is he the guy, I think,
yeah,
in charge of recruitment? You know, his history is a bit washy. You got Willian, paid in fortunes. Who else did he buy? It was the Chelsea defender, played at the back.
David Luiz.
Yeah, got him. But, you know, he played with all these players, I think, John. And I think he's thinking, yeah, I'll get them in, we'll do that. And the recruitment hasn't been brilliant. And, you know, think about the Aubameyang thing. And
maybe it has improved, though. Ben White was...
Yes,
no, it Kieran Tierney.
Yeah. You know, Martinelli looks a player, although what he lost the lot for 20 seconds the other night. No, they've started to look a team. But at the moment, can you really rely on them is all I will say to you. And yes, they do look like they've got a chance of finishing fourth. But Burnley at home... And to be honest with you, they never really looked like scoring, did they? So, listen, I'm a fan of Arteta. I like what he's trying to do, and it may well be he needs another transfer window. I can only see them getting better, definitely.
Paul Scholes on BT, penny for his thoughts, JD.
Yeah, and the Goddle beside him as well.
His old club, Oldham Athletic, looked on the verge of dropping out of the league altogether,
right,
as well.
The Oldham story is crazy.
What happened there?
Well, I mean, this is a classic attempt now to plug a piece, but I actually have a piece in the Sunday papers tomorrow about Owen Doyle. this is brilliant. It was like, that was completely
I didn't know this.
No, you did not know this.
No, I didn't know this.
But now that you mention it. But no, I was speaking to Owen Doyle, who has joined St. Patrick's Athletic, but the piece is more so about his 10 years in football in the UK. And the Oldham one, they had a Moroccan football agent took over a couple of years ago. And bizarrely, I was in Oldham around that time doing a piece with Jack Byrne when he was there.
Right.
And I noticed that the owner, it was around transfer deadline day, and the owner was sort of moving around the lobby. And I was like, new owner. And do you know the way a new owner always gets a lot of leeway? But Owen Doyle would be making the point that they got their recruitment badly wrong, brought in a lot of a French colony of players on very good money for League One, and they went from being playoff contenders to getting relegated that season. And then since then, the club was, it's just a classic case of a club that's been run quite dysfunctionally.
Okay.
And the owner, of course, has said he's willing to go now. But I mean, they're on the verge of sort of falling out of the Football League, which is sort of amazing when you think of, I suppose,
the 1990 FA Cup semi-final.
Joe Royle and the boys.
Dennis Irwin
Andy Ritchie.
Ian Marshall and that Oldham team. Yeah.
It's just going to be a nostalgic Saturday, Laura, the way it's going.
Yeah.
The coldest ground in the country.
Was it an artificial pitch, Oldham?
Boundary Park, wasn't it?
Was it an artificial at that stage? Was it? Yeah.
I think for a time.
When Joe Royle Yeah. I mean, what if talk about recruitment? What about his recruitment? You just mentioned some of them there. Unbelievable. Some of them went on to play for England. But definitely the coldest ground ever in the UK. Easily.
Yeah. The day I was there as well, you know, you have an image of English football.
John Sheridan, was he involved?
Yeah.
Well, John Sheridan...
He's gone back there now.
I think he's gone back there. Exactly. He's sort it's of like... he's like one of these recurring figures in a soap opera who just keeps coming back for the Christmas special or something, you know?
Is this your car going to come out now?
No. Get
into the neighbours debate.
He's gone back there several times, but...
Should neighbours be saved on Football Saturday?
But you know the way you... Do you know the way you have English football on a pedestal? And I just remember being there that day, and their training ground was down the road from the stadium, very modest. It was frozen over that day. Players had to go up and train on the pitch. The pitch wasn't in good condition, so they were training on the pitch and then hoping to play there at the weekend. And like, they had good footballers in the team, and yet the pitch is wrecked. And you're just thinking, this is not like... You know, League One, you know, you sort of imagine that this is like some... We sometimes have an image of football, English football from afar, that like everything was great there, you know, everything, this is where you want to be.
Well, look at Barry.
But look at the amount of stuff, yeah, the football
A lot of clubs in the north, around that region, have actually, the likes of Macclesfield as well, Bolton, have suffered badly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Rochdale, another one, I think.
Yeah.
The only one who hasn't, Accrington Stanley.
Who are they? Exactly.
Driving, yes. John Coleman's still there, isn't it? Yeah, they're...
John Coleman, he lives about 200 yards away from me, Jason.
Yeah.
And you want to see what they've done, actually, physically with the club in terms of new stands and everything. The guy, Andy Holden, who's young, he's just trying to make sure that he wants to pack in as soon as he can. He said, oh, I've had enough. He said, as much as I love it, and he is a proper fan, you know, flat cap, the whole thing. He said, much as I love it, I just want to have the stadium, the ground, everything about it that pays for itself and pays for all the players coming in. He was telling me they were trying to get a lad in from Leicester on loan, obviously before the transfer window closed. And Accrington Stanley's ceiling in terms of wages is £1,800 a week, which is good when you think about it, 90 plus grand a year, right? Plus bonuses and stuff. And they went to Leicester, and Leicester wanted £200 a week more for this kid. And to be fair to Andy Holden, he said, no, we can't pay. He said, but why don't you let him come anyway? Because he's going to play and get experience. But I think John Coleman's had something like seven promotions, obviously from lower leagues, but all the way through. And he's a real canny scouser. And by the way, any player that he gets and sells on, obviously, and he's done it nearly every single year, it just keeps improving, not just the team, but also the ground and everything about it. It's a great place to go because it's proper football.
Yeah, I know it's a slight tangent, but I think that the owner there, Andy, has been very vocal on the crazy spending below the leagues. And when you think that Accrington Stanley are in the same league as Sunderland, we'll probably talk about Sunderland and Roy Keane in due course, that a club where, you know, you'll have probably players there on probably, you know, 20 grand a week, sort of legacy
40,000 at their game the
legacy
other day.
Contracts in some ways, and Accrington, like, for a club like that to try and compete at that level, it's admirable they've tried to do it sustainably, because elsewhere clubs just run up losses and you know, they just go up and down like snakes and ladders, you know. That's the
but also to completely reshape the ground.
Yeah, that's really impressive. Yeah,
three new stands. I mean, where does that come from?
Okay, we've got to take a break. Laro, Dan McDonnell and Johnny Ward on Football Saturday. Scotland 8, Wales 6 in the Six Nations in Cardiff. And also a result from the Championship. Huddersfield 0, Sheffield United 0. It has ended in a draw. Man United 1, Southampton 1. We're going to speak about Liverpool after this.
Can you come on and talk about Ireland's attack shape? It's really exciting.
I don't remember ever getting that call 15 years ago.
The Six Nations on OTB. Don't miss a moment of the action. Subscribe to the OTB Rugby podcast feed now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7 on an extended show as we bring you updates and analysis later on around Ireland's game with France. Remember, Football and Off the Ball brought to you by Sky. Don't miss Leicester City against West Ham United on Super Sunday live only on Sky Sports. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation. You can listen on News Talk, also watch us on the digital and social channels for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook and on the OTB Sports app. We're joined by Laro, the former Republic of Ireland international
Arsenal and a European Cup winner with Liverpool. Football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonald, and the broadcaster and journalist, Johnny Ward, to talk about the beautiful game. Just going through some of the 3 o'clock games in the Premier League. We've got Watford against Brighton with Shane Duffy and Everton Ferguson on the bench for Brighton. Now we've got Brentford against Crystal Palace and Everton against Leeds. Donny van de Beek making a start for Everton today. Seamus Coleman in the team again. He was playing wing back for the last two matches. He's now in the back four, the captain of Everton. Alex Iwobi into the team, as is John Joe Kenny and Dominic Calvert-Lewin starting up front. So four changes for Everton, no changes for Leeds from the 3-3 draw against Aston Villa during the week. It's Manchester City away to Norwich from 5:30. Any kind of vibe on Merseyside about Frank Lampard so far, Laro, or is it too early?
I think it's too early, and I think everybody realises that it's become a really big job, this. Interesting you say that Seamus Coleman is playing in a flat back four. Seamus has been an outstanding player, I think we can all agree. But looking at it at the moment, I think his legs have actually gone, John.
I agree, Laurel. I think his days of wing-back are gone.
Yeah, which is a real shame. And defensively, including the goalkeeper at Everton, they've been poor. They've been porous for most of the season as well. And I think therein lies their problem. But I think what will happen today against the Leeds team as well is that Goodison will be red hot. They really, really, really will be behind the team, and it might just help them. But I don't see them being relegated. But it's going to be a good job. A hard, long, hard job for Redknapp.
Lampard, you mean?
Lampard, yeah, that's his buddy in it. Sorry,
and they're related, aren't they?
Yes.
Today
it's Uncle Frank, innit?
Yeah. Today will be very interesting because the Norwich have made bits of progress. Burnley have kind of given themselves.
Newcastle as well.
Newcastle, I like just watching a bit of the Everton game the other night. They were, I mean, it's kind of sad to say, but the crowd was unbelievably after them. Like, and maybe I'd be the exact same, and people say, well, the Saudis nearly took over Galway United, but the Newcastle fans, it was great after the other night. They didn't care. They look like a team that's on the up, and Everton were poor. I don't know if you saw it, Laura, but Everton were poor.
Oh, they were poor. They're all over the pitch, they were poor. They were second to the ball and everything. And listen, you'd have known as a player going there that the Newcastle punters would be right behind their team because, they won one game as well and they go absolutely mad there. It was just a really, really poor performance, to be honest with you.
I think Coleman's days playing, like Coleman's Irish days could be in trouble now because I think, as Laura said, he's 34 this year. It's hard to see him play.
Who's going to replace him? Who's going to replace him?
You say that though, Johnny, but he was also probably one of their best players in the autumn just gone.
He's got to play him from one of the three, I think.
You know, well, I think that's probably where, the right of a back three is probably where you could see him playing conceivably. But I mean,
there's a lot of options.
There's no doubt his club form hasn't been great, but I suppose he is still playing at Premier League level. So when you apply it to an international sense, a lot of players there aren't playing at that level, so I think Irish wise he'll be needed for a good while yet.
Needed for his leadership.
I wouldn't be writing him off in an Irish perspective for sure.
This is the thing, maybe he's already spoken yesterday about how Lampard has injected confidence into the squad and they're trying to play more possession football, and maybe Lampard sees Seamus Coleman and anybody would see him as a guy I want on my pitch.
I think the problem they've had with Coleman as well across the last year, if you look at it, I think it was maybe that Irish triple header that they had. I think it was the first time he'd played three games consecutively almost in a year. I think even under Ancelotti they were managing Coleman a bit, and he I think it's more of a, I think it's a little recurring hamstring issue I think he might have had, that they've had to sort of mind it. So he is at that stage, I suppose, one of those players who used, who was a strong runner for so long, it obviously does catch up with you eventually.
Liverpool, Laro, against Leicester, it seemed to me, looking at the match, that Luis Diaz looks like a Liverpool player, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And I mean, we're always a bit wary, aren't we? Because that's his first start. But do you know what? The way he was tackling back, that he was throwing himself into all kinds of challenges. Obviously, he's that classic sort of right-footed player on the left. But he goes past full-backs with his right foot rather than just kind of cutting in a la Coutinho, something like that. Look, John, he's Colombian. He'll have been kicked to bits playing in Colombia. Absolutely no doubt about that. So these South American boys can seriously look after themselves. There doesn't seem much of him, but honestly, he was he made himself felt the other day, but he played very, very well. I mean, Klopp was right. He said, you know, it's a really good debut, but, and that's the way that it is. But they won comfortably. I was at the game. They won comfortably, Liverpool, in all honesty. Leicester were perfunctory, is that right? Is that the right word for a while?
Yeah.
Didn't really look like conceding for a while, to be honest with you. One golden chance, obviously, before he scored through Jota, who's now just, you know, talk about being one of the favourites. He can't stop scoring. But at 1-0, there's always a chance. But Leicester played well enough after what had happened with the previous result. But be interesting to see what they do over the weekend, because when they're forced to actually push on, I'm not sure defensively when they're good enough. Not with the team that they had the other night, anyway.
We saw from Liverpool, what's it, 5 wins now in all competitions, 9 points behind City. Is there a chance they could catch them?
Yeah, but it's slim. Win the game in hand, that makes it 6. You're just looking at Manchester. The problem is everybody starts to look at the fixtures now, don't they, and think, well, we'll win there and all that. And, you know, Liverpool have had some iffy results this season, if you look at it. Certainly in London, apart from the win at Palace, they've struggled a little bit. But I think this is the first time probably that Klopp's got all these major players fit and well at this stage of the season. I can't think of anybody. Obviously, Joe Gomez is still struggling a little bit, but he doesn't get anywhere near the team anyway. Thiago's fit, played the other day. I think they're all fit. Competition for places, which is great. So they'll give it a go, won't they? But I just don't see it. And everyone points to, oh, might go to Man City and win. Well, you know, they might be 9-10 points behind them by then anyway, but I don't see it, but it's a slim chance.
Fabinho was excellent, as always, the other night. But I suppose Harvey Elliott and Curtis Jones also give Klopp options now in the middle.
Well, Curtis Jones actually isn't playing very well. And I didn't think he'd start the other night, because he's been the classic case, came into the team and looked a real player, obviously scored goals, assists and all those kind of things. He's had a couple of injuries. And now I just get the impression that he's trying to recreate what he had when he first came into the team, and he's having too many touches on the ball, and he's got this trick which everybody knows. He gave the ball away quite a bit the other night, and it's you almost want to clear him of all his thoughts when he's playing football and just go out and play naturally. But it happens with players, and you know, people will say second season syndrome and all that, because people in terms of the opposition work out how you play and what the tricks are on that. But if anything, as ridiculous as this sounds, he's probably trying too hard. He just needs to go back to the old Liverpool mantra, you know, why have more than 2 touches if you can possibly do so? And I think Klopp, I'm pretty sure, will put his arm around him and stuff. But and he's been brought off early, hasn't he, in the last 2 games. So Klopp doesn't normally do that. So he's maybe not enamoured with his performances at the moment.
How is Alexander-Arnold not in England's picture?
Ah, ridiculous. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? It's just, I don't really get it. I mean, he makes football look so easy. And you know, I remember when England played him in midfield, didn't he? And that one game. And I'm thinking, I think he only lasted a half. It's just, people don't get this. It's just, the boys will know, this is completely different in terms of, you play at fullback in a team like Liverpool, you're forever coming onto the ball. You're nearly always in space. And if you can pass it, and he's a great passer, great kick of the ball, and he sees crosses and all those kind of things, and he's quick and he goes past people, it's easy for him. Once you're in midfield, you're on the half turn. It's completely different. And I know Southgate probably thinks he might have better defenders in that particular role. The Chelsea boy, was it James, isn't it?
He's
done extremely well as well, but not to be in the squad, which is perhaps there's whispers at the moment that he might not even be in the squad for the next whoever they're playing. But he's just an outstanding footballer, him and his mates across the other side.
Robertson,
when you think of it between them, I think what was Robbo, about 8.5 million or something like that, I think, from Hull, and homegrown right back in Alexander Arnold. Imagine what they would cost now, those two.
It's baffling to think, you know, there's a scenario, which it did seem possible before he got injured, right, anyway, that they would go to a major tournament without him, because, okay, maybe he may not fit what you're looking for, but you got to think there's going to be, within a tournament, a scenario where someone that, you know, that proficient sort of technically is what you're going to need. If you end up in a situation where, I don't know, a team has sort of parked the bus or whatever you want to call it, you know, some scenario, you would think actually he's a great squad option to have, even if, okay, you may not trust him as your number one, and that's fine. But like, as a plan B, you would have thought he's a great squad option. You know, so it's something, it feels like we're missing something. I don't know.
Southgate being too conservative, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's what did you say?
Southgate's too conservative as a manager.
Oh, yeah, he is conservative. Absolutely. But they were conservative in the Euros, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were. If you really look at the teams that he put out, they were conservative. I mean, it worked up to a point, obviously, apart from the fact they played every game at home apart from one. But no, he is conservative. He's just decided, yeah, the two holding midfield players and, you know, three at the back sometimes, whatever. But that's just the way he is as a manager, I'm afraid.
Will they... I think with Liverpool is, like, when you think with Salah and Mane back and the Anfield environment, they've got a big chance in the Champions League, whether they're going to catch City or not in the Premier League.
Well, you know, I don't know whether you boys have ever been on those massive nights, but it's like, wow... it's, you know, even for like me at 64, when I still go back and go to those games, it's like hairs on the back of your neck and all that kind of stuff. It's just absolutely amazing. And I think they're feared by everybody. I don't think anybody wants to play them at all. Obviously, they start in Milan, don't they, this midweek. But as I said before, and they're all fit. And, you know, the important bit of the team, you would say, in the Champions League is obviously... your goal scorers. Well, who's he going to play? He's now spoiled for choice, isn't he? Mane will obviously be back. He's got, what, five outstanding players. Maybe even six if you count Firmino as well, whose form started to come back a little bit without really kind of looking like he's going to score goals. But I think when he plays with Mane and Salah, he's kind of the glue that keeps those three together. So... They're just in a great position at the moment in many, many different ways.
53106, your text matches. Got to take a break for the news with Lara, with Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward. If Liverpool weren't so good, we'd have a Bayern Munich situation in the Premier League with Man City being so dominant, says Patrick. And also, Trent isn't in the squad for England because Southgate is a defensive coach, as we saw during the Euros, where his defensive tactics cost them. We're on air until 7 today on Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk, because we're bringing you all the rugby analysis and updates with Brent Pope and Fiona Hayes later on. That is after 4, between 4 and 7. So we're on earlier with Football Saturday today between 2 and 4 with the lads. You can text us on 53106. Manchester United 1, Southampton 1. We're going to hear from Ralph Rangnick after the break, because another 2 points dropped for Man U. Don't go away.
Football on Off the Ball
with Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more live on Sky Sports.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7 on this extended show as we bring you Ireland versus France coverage later. At the moment, it's 14 points apiece between Wales and Scotland in the Six Nations in Cardiff. We have Mark Lawrenson, the former Republic of Ireland and Liverpool defender, on the line with us for Football Saturday earlier this week between 2 and 4 because of the rugby. Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward are also in studio with us. Just to go through what's going on elsewhere, Manchester United won, Southampton won, a result from the Premier League earlier on. It ended Huddersfield 0, Sheffield United 0 as well in the Championship. Ballyhale Shamrocks and Ballygunner have just thrown in the club hurling final at Croke Park. The football decider between Kilmacud and Kilcoo has got a 5 o'clock start. Antrim 1-9, Dublin 1-8 at Carrigan Park in Division 1 Group B of the Hurling League. That is the latest score. And at Naas, Mark Walsh has landed a double on the car there. Govan has won a maiden hurdle there, price of 6-4. Earlier on, Walsh was on board. Brazil, a 9-4 winner of the opening race. And El Dorado Allen, at a price of 6-1, has won the Denman Chase, the Grade 2 race at Newbury for trainer Colin Tizard and jockey Brendan Powell. Let's hear now from Ralph Rangnick, the Manchester United interim boss, after the 1-1 draw with Southampton.
Again, very similar to the last couple of games. Very good first half. Very good first half hour. We did all the things that we intended to do with the counterattacks, with the deep runs. Exactly that way we created the goal and prepared that goal. Great goal in all aspects of the goal. But then we stopped doing that. Even at the end of the first half, we didn't do those things anymore. And then in the second half, we also lost a bit of shape. In the first 20 minutes, we were struggling to defend them. Exactly that happened in transition when they scored their goal. Yes, and in the last 20 minutes, we had enough opportunities, big chances to score again. Expected goal ratio was clearly in our favour, but in the end, we didn't get the result that we wanted to.
That's a very clear analysis of it. But why? What's the problem? Why does the intensity drop like that?
Well, on the one hand, we also have to respect the other team. Southampton played well. They played with the same intensity and tactical approach that they did against Tottenham. So this is not an easy team to play against. But yes, we lost a little bit composure. We took, again, wrong decisions, sometimes under pressure, sometimes not under pressure. And this is where we have just to have to get better. Whenever we prepare the team for the next possible game, as I said, in the last 4 or 5 games, we started extremely well. We had an excellent half hour again today. But in the end, it's about playing in that way for more than just one half.
So what do you say at halftime? It's not a teacup throwing thing, but...
Of course. I mean, we told them exactly that we have to be aggressive, that we have to stay compact, that we shouldn't give them any space where they could move into and play their transitional football. This is exactly what we told them, obviously. Yeah, but in the end, it's a different thing to perform like that on the pitch.
One plus is Jadon Sancho's goal today and his performance in the first half.
Sorry?
Jadon Sancho's performance in the first half was one of the positives, one of the plus.
Well, Jadon is in good shape, not only in the first half, also in the second half. He had his good moments. With Jadon's performance in the last couple of weeks, I'm very pleased. This is the Jadon Sancho that I know from the German Bundesliga. There is still more space for improvement for him, but I mean, in the way that he's playing now, probably is the best Jadon Sancho that Manchester United has seen so far.
But this top four battle now, you're giving away points at the moment, aren't you? It's going to make it harder and harder for you.
Yes, we know that. It was the fourth game out of the last 5 or 6 where we were 1-0 or 2-0 up and didn't get full points. So, yeah, this was 6 points. If you add on Aston Villa, Burnley and the game today, that would have been 6 points. It can happen, but not 6 points, but maximum 4 points. And this is why we're all very disappointed, but doesn't help. We have to look ahead and look forward and do it better on Tuesday against Brighton.
Ralf Rangnick there speaking to BT Sport after the 1-1 draw with Southampton. Lauro, to me, when I heard that, he sounded like a detached TV pundit talking about a club that he's got no connection with.
Yeah. And he kept on going saying, yeah, we just repeated the way we played. Well, why after the first one, or at the very latest, the second performance of that run of games, why didn't you suddenly think, you know, hold on a minute, you know, what is our problem here? So if the... It sounds to me like they keep knocking off and they keep conceding goals in second half of games. Well, that will be sort of lack of concentration, but also labelled with, are we fit enough as a team? I just don't get it. It just sounds as though he's actually, Ralf Rangnick, God love him, is not sure why his team can't perform in the second half. It's just a strange, strange thing to say. I mean, you know, yeah, we know Southampton are a decent team and stuff, but this is Manchester United, and this is Manchester United at home. And God, it used to be so, so tough just to go there. And whether they were great players or not, it was you never, ever, ever stop running. You come off at half-time, you think, crikey, I'm not sure I could do another 45 minutes because, you know, the pressure, the tackling, the whole kind of thing. And that just seems to have completely ebbed away. The more managers they've had and the different formations and systems that they're using at the moment, they can only play for 45 minutes. It's madness, John.
Sounds like a hunger thing, lads, to me. This is Man United. Everything should be just thrown. Like, you should be dead at the 90 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, it just seems like, as we've touched on, and it sort of runs, it's a recurring theme that there's just a sort of... There's a sort of a malaise that it's set in there, you know, and you know, the environment. If the environment isn't good, I can imagine, I suppose people, maybe it's very hard to relate to it because it's Manchester United and it's such an elite environment. But I suppose if anyone's working in any environment where people are just sick at a place, you know, it just wears people down over a period of time. And I think we've spoken about it before. Like, generally, there's a new bounce when a manager comes in. That didn't even happen this time, and maybe he just got off on the wrong foot with them, and as a result, as sort of was alluded to earlier on, I think, by Laurel, you know, they're sort of counting time, really. And we all know that the whole business model of the owners is very much just finishing the top four. That's all that matters. That's the big thing. And it's still very possible that they'll do it. You know, they'll find a bit of I know Johnny mentioned earlier, you know, maybe the players may not be good enough. I still think if the players hit their what they are capable of, they will finish in the top four. But it's very hard to trust them, as you mentioned. Like, the points are just the games are drifting by. The points are drifting away. But there's no, like, even if you watch them in the last few minutes of games and how they go about trying to break teams down, it's just all a bit of hoping by chance things happen. It's not like you see Man City score late goals. They wear teams down because they keep going, they're relentless, and they force a mistake. But Manchester United looked like at times teams quite, they sort of know what they expect. They're like, well, they're going to try and get the ball into Ronaldo and hope he can magic something out of it, rather than, you know, relentlessly sort of wear teams down with their persistence. It's not really like that. So yeah, it sort of trundles on. It's just sort of it's the story that's sort of trundled on all year.
Yeah, we have fixtures coming up against Brighton, Leeds away. Will be interesting. Can they get themselves up for that next week? One of the most bitterly contested games in English football history. Watford at home, Man City away, and then Tottenham. And they've got those two Champions League last 16 games against Atletico Madrid.
Seamus Coleman goal for Everton against Leeds.
Take it all back, Laro.
Yeah, it's all back, don't worry. I told you he was a great player. Nothing wrong with him.
That's a massive goal.
I think they might win. Well, after those stupid predictions, I thought they might just win today. I think I said to you before, I think the crowd will be massive today in terms of vocally as much as anything. I think they've just had enough, and they obviously are trying to turn the corner and help the players at home, certainly.
We're going to just try and find out when Seamus Coleman last scored a goal for Everton. But that's a fantastic goal. 10 minutes into the game at Goodison Park, it is Everton 1, Leeds United 0 in the Premier League. What a goal that could be for Frank Lampard, as they just want to make sure they're not in the final day and trying to survive. There's no goals, by the way, in the Championship matches. Barnsley against QPR, Birmingham against Luton, Blackpool against Bournemouth, Hull against Fulham, Middlesbrough against Derby, Millwall, Cardiff, Nottingham Forest against Stoke, Peterborough against Preston, and Reading against Coventry. Also matches in League One. And in the Scottish Cup today, Motherwell 0, Aberdeen 1 is the latest score. And as we said, in League One, we have, what is it, Wimbledon are playing Sunderland. Were you surprised, Dan, that Roy Keane didn't end up there?
Yeah, I have to say I am, although I suppose you did look at it from another direction, and you see, you know, Sunderland with their 24-year-old chairman. It seems the sporting director, the influence he has been questioned, and maybe you could imagine Roy Keane going into a room and thinking, I'm not sure about this setup, whether it's for me. But I would have written a piece at the start of it that if it was the case that Sunderland had effectively offered him the job, which I think certainly seemed to be the thrust of it, and Roy Keane has spoken about wanting to get back into management, I sort of feel like, you know, after 10 years or 11 years out of it, do you have to grin and bear some of the things? You know, Roy Keane's had this point recently on the overlap interview with Gary Neville, that he had this sort of rant about managers who keep getting jobs, you know, these managers who keep getting like 6, 7, 8 jobs. Like Alex Neil has gone there now, who's previously been at Preston and Norwich, and if Roy Keane wasn't in this process, you can imagine Roy Keane sitting somewhere saying, look at him, how has he got another chance? And maybe some other people are just so keen to get into work that they'll put up with the circumstances of a club and accept that, okay, maybe this contract isn't great, maybe I'm not so sure about the vibe here, but, you know, the easiest way to stay in work is to be in work. You know, you might use that as a bridge to somewhere else. So I'm sure in time we will hear what happened.
We don't know the full.
He's fully entitled. He's fully entitled to, you know, you can speculate. You know, of course, anyone is always entitled in any walk of life to look at an offer and think that's not for me. But I suppose when Roy Keane had been so vocal about his desire to get back in, he might have had some very clear reason, but if it's just a case that maybe he wasn't sure about the environment, he sort of, it would lead people, he opens himself up to questions about, you know, is he desperate to get back in? You know, and that's like he's very successful in where he is now in his punditry. He's doing extremely well. So it's not a money thing for him. You'd imagine it would have to be the feel of the, you know, the vibe that he got off people. But I'm not sure, like, where is he going to? We spoke earlier about Accrington Stanley and the sort of the mayhem that exists in the Football League to some degree, and how there's a couple of clubs that are sane but a lot of them aren't. And if Roy Keane wants to get back into that circuit, he might have to accept that you may not get to work with the type of characters you might want to do so. So I was surprised.
I think John as well is, I mean, How old is the owner, did we say?
24, yeah, billionaire owner, yeah. His father, the late father, used to own Marseille.
Say again, sorry?
His late father used to own Marseille.
Right, okay. So just before the end of transfer window, didn't Sunderland take two or three players? My memory seems to recall. Obviously, to strengthen the team for Johnson and stuff. They got beat 6-0 and he sacked him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would you do? I know 6-0, whatever, you know, but a one-off game, and then he's signed all the checks for these new guys coming in, and then decided that the manager's not good enough. And I'm guessing, but I reckon when and if Roy Keane saw and met the manager, he's probably thinking, I'm not sure about this whatsoever. The manager might have said, we have to get out of the division. And all those kind of things as well. And, you know, this lad, and it's not his fault he's 24, the owner, but he's probably making mistakes all the time anyway. And that, essentially, in life is how we learn. But, you know, if you sanction three transfers coming in and kick on, and you have one bad result straight away, but you sack the manager. Really, you know what I mean? I just do not get that whatsoever.
Will this not, though, maybe look regarding other clubs taking notice now and go, what, there's a lot of chatter about Roy Keane, this could be great for our brand?
Well, I do take your point on that. Like, I suppose there is a way that, like, Roy Keane, probably in the last 18 months, I don't recall, at various times he was mentioned, a couple of national team jobs, and at times it was sort of a lot of these false Don Roy Keane stories that I'm not sure the sort of credibility of some of them. But this one, obviously, there was clear substance to it. And I take your point, it's put him back out there. And maybe if you want to look at it from the very understanding of Roy Keane's position, like, maybe he knows that if he is going to get back in, he certainly can't go into, as sort of Laura mentions, maybe a place that there could be a trigger happy thing. Like, if Roy Keane had gone to Sunderland, things hadn't gone well and he was turfed out, you know, like Lee Johnson was in a short time.
He'd be compared to Roy Keane. He'd be compared to Roy Keane 14 years ago.
Yeah, there's probably no coming back at all, really. So I understand that if he gets back in, people can sit here and talk about, oh, if he's desperate to get in, he should take any job. I mean, life isn't that easy. But I guess maybe it may have been that he's aware that he might have one more chance at this. So if you're going to have that one more chance, you want to go into an environment where you trust that you're going to have a proper crack at it. But it just, because of the potential of the club, as Johnny mentions earlier, the crowds they attract, the buzz that even was generated by Keane being spoken about, that the fans really wanted him there. And actually, since this has happened, since they've got rid of Johnson, they've lost their last three games. So it doesn't seem, maybe he's dodged a bullet, but it sort of feels like it's a shame he hasn't gone for it.
Middlesbrough won.
The good news is Preston are really happy because Alex Neil was on gardening leave, so they were paying him every month, so that's
right,
finished.
Okay.
Obviously, happy days.
Get him back in. Yeah.
Middlesbrough won Derby nil in the Championship. Funambul Sivilla has won the Game Spirit Chase at Newbury, the 9-4 shot for Venetia Williams, the trainer there, and it is still 14 points apiece between Scotland and Wales in Cardiff in the Six Nations. Johnny, are you buzzed 6 years on from the fact that we're going to have Euro games here in Dublin? Because I think, to me, that's a done deal.
The Euros?
Yeah.
As in 2028?
Yeah, it's going to happen.
You think it's going to happen?
Yeah, I do, absolutely.
Yeah, there are different takes on this. I'm not against it, and I think Dion Fanning had an interesting article in the Currency today about it, and Dan had an article about it as well, about there are so many issues in Irish football that are far more important than 2028, and I agree with that. But if
presuming that a 2028 bid can have benefits, and I think the FAI, I'm obviously only saying this now because I'm now...
Excuse me, FAI TV's Johnny Ward.
I think it, you know... And then
would you describe the FAI as a giant or a sleeping giant, Johnny?
I just think the FAI is the greatest thing ever, to be honest. And I don't...
I'm surprised you didn't come in here with a jacket, to be honest, and some branding.
I do think the new FAI...
Different
like
types of fleeces.
He's partial to a blazer, Johnny. I never
blazer,
thought,
okay.
But different type of blazer brigade, to be honest. Yeah.
The strategic review that's been brought out, I mean, the idea that we could have a third tier in the League of Ireland next season, to me, I mean, there are definitely some things I think are hugely ambitious. But I think the new FAI is kind of prioritising the League of Ireland more so than maybe was the case before, and that is a very low bar. So we've massive problems in the League of Ireland, but you know, if the 2028 thing can happen, I mean, I'd love to see the Euros in Ireland, even as a kind of a, you know, a partner in it. I'd love to see Casement Park being developed, because I think it's a disgrace what's happened there. I think as much as this would be a strange reason for that to happen, you know, the fact that Casement Park has been left run to where it is, I presume Windsor Park wouldn't be big enough.
No, it's not.
So we'd have like we'd obviously have Croke Park presumably available, Lansdowne Road, and maybe Casement. I'd love to see it, and I don't necessarily see why that's not why you couldn't marry that with the League of Ireland making the progress. We saw some of the grants this week, but we still have major football is still run in a strange way in this country, JD, where there are large parts of it that have no real League of Ireland history whatsoever and no potential to have a club in the future. And Mark Scanlon spoke about this during the week, like even my local club Shiven Rovers' ambition should be to play in the League of Ireland, and that sounds ridiculous, but like you look at the likes of Forest Green in England, some of these entities, Forest Green are going to be in the third tier. Why not dream that you can play at the top level? And so we've massive problems, but I don't see why that's not consistent with 2028 happening, and it seems far less avaricious than a World Cup bid.
Well, there's no real difference between the World Cup bid. And the thing about it is, I mean, Casement Park, the chances of that being done, but I mean, maybe I'm too used to the Irish planning process. Getting Casement Park done by 2028, 2 years earlier than the World Cup bid, would seem ambitious to me. In reality, I think John, I agree with you. I think this bid will probably, I think there's a real confidence behind it. I think the reason for that is the corporate power of Wembley, which is where the latter half of the competition will most certainly take place, because UEFA just wants cash, and as a result, this is why the bid is attractive.
Dan, you've got to have a Northern Ireland ground in this.
I think it's 6 years.
They build a hospital in like 2 weeks in China. How would it take us 6 years to build a ground? Seriously.
The political wheels in China move in a different way to Stormont, Johnny.
But the IFA wanting Casement to be built would be one of the most bizarre kind of contradictory things even by the state of Northern Ireland. But 6 years. Could we not get something done
even
in 6 years?
They effectively don't have a sitting government half the time in Northern Ireland. So get them to agree in a stadium. Listen, a side issue to a lot of people listening. I would have been quite sceptical, and am quite sceptical about this bid from the perspective that I gather the outlay from the FAI's perspective isn't that big at all. I do believe that to be the case, but I think it's just there's a fatigue, there's like a sort of a the PTSD almost of living through a time when tournament bids and big tournament bids are used to mask other stuff. And while I accept that as Everton have scored, they've gone 2-0 up.
Michael Keane, 2-0.
While I accept that, it may not be about the financial energy, my fear is that, and maybe my fear is that in like 5-6 years' time, we're talking about what the FAI have done, and it's like, well, we've got the tournament to Dublin. This is what we've done. And it's a focus to mask other stuff. If they can get things going concurrently and genuinely progress the game, I take the point about the bid not necessarily, like, you can do both things, but I understand, and I think maybe in a way, Johnny, maybe the backlash against the bid this week was needed just to remind the FAI of that. And I think that they will probably, if they are listening, they'll be aware of that, and that the backlash in a way was worthy to remind people that we're not just going to accept this bid as an acceptance. Like, when you think of the chronically low confidence that was became the default setting for a lot of people involved in football, that they almost thought that the only way you could get tournaments here was because John Delaney was popular in UEFA. You know, which is mad. You know, like, it's that we almost thought we needed this person to do things for us, where I think it's very possible that this tournament will come here and no one's talking about some wonderful sort of figure who made this happen. I think there's an attractiveness to Dublin as part of a bid. I think England, who are the drivers of this bid, probably need a little bit of the the Irish eyes in.
Good PR after what happened
do.
In the summer.
Of course they do. They want the Guinness will be flowing. You know, that's what they want.
But also, and also the Aviva is a, you know, they've proven themselves at the Europa
Park,
League.
By the way, Croke Park has slipped under the radar. Croke Park will only be involved if it's a 32-team tournament.
Yeah.
Now, it does seem like they're moving it towards a 32-team tournament, perhaps. But that's just something to be conscious of.
Okay.
You know, that there's layers to it. But yeah, if maybe the backlash was needed. And people are have their eyes open to the real stuff that is important.
Okay. Michael Keane was a direct header from a corner, so Everton 2 Leeds 0 in the
Premier League. The Seamus Coleman goal, by the way, was a header from a Donny van der Beek cross.
Oh, so, look, I'm telling you.
Being reliably informed by Gar Maher, who works the FAI, was a good mate of mine, Gar, that he's just crept into the top 10 Irish Premier League goal scorers. 21, it's technically the top 11 because he's joined 10th with Stephen Hunt. And if anyone can tell me who was ninth, I'd be very, very impressed. But I can actually name the other: Robbie Keane, Niall Quinn, Shane Long, Damien Duff, John Walters, Roy Keane, Kevin Doyle, Ian Hart. And if anyone can guess who was ninth, I'll be very impressed.
Did you know the other ones off the top of your head? Did you?
Absolutely not. I'm amazed Seamus Coleman has gotten 21 goals.
Why are you surprised by it? Can you give us one clue? Like, why?
He's known for something that isn't goals.
Roy Delap.
Not amazed anymore.
Yeah.
23.
Roy Delap, you see, had a spell as a utility man.
Yeah.
He played up front for, I think it was at Derby when he was younger, so yeah.
Where is his son now? He was at Man City.
Man City. He's on the fringes there at Man City. Was on the squad
Roy
the other day.
Good shout, Dan.
Liam Delap. Laro, does hosting international tournaments benefit countries in your view? Haven't been to all of them in the world, given you've been around the world?
No, not necessarily. And especially, you know, if you look at the World Cup, John, I mean, look at Brazil. Look at some of the places, South Africa. You know, lucky enough to go there, fabulous newly built stadium, then 18 months later, absolutely nothing. Wasn't even that the way with the Olympics in, was it Sydney? Didn't they just have empty stadiums afterwards and they didn't actually really know what to do with them? So, no, not really. I mean, I love the idea because you'd go to the games and everything, but whether it absolutely benefits anybody, apart from FIFA or UEFA, I'm not really sure.
What Laura's touching on there, like that I have to say that absolutely sickens me, where they, like the likes of Qatar or like these kind of tournaments where they build these stadia, which clearly will not have a legacy, and it's obvious before you do it. But like something like this for Ireland, like our facilities in this country are so backward for the state of the nation. We're a very wealthy country. Look at the League of Ireland, like Drogheda, Dundalk, the likes of UCD in the Premier Division this season. All these decrepit grounds, and even the like Tala's. If you brought somebody from England to Tala, he or she'd be like, well, this is grand. But like, we put this forward as a great ground. Like, we're so backward in this country.
Yeah.
So stuff like this, like Casement Park. Now, I'm not sure the ins and outs of this, and Dan seems to like be kind of despondent about it.
I don't think
Northern Ireland could badly do with it. Like Northern Ireland could badly do with the proper stadium. It doesn't have one.
Well, it's going to end.
It's
up
amazing though that
GAA stadium will end up.
But amazing though, it takes this to we'll get the thing done in 2 years. Given they haven't played a game of Casement Park since 2013.
Mm. Where is Casement Park? Excuse me.
Belfast.
It's Belfast. West Belfast, yeah.
Okay.
It's probably the only thing that would unite Northern Ireland is if you could get Casement Park built for 2028 for the Euros. I actually don't think anyone will be against that. But then again, it is Northern Ireland.
I'm just... Would
pay for that?
Well, I don't know. I mean...
They're in partner. I was in the press conference, the virtual press conference again. Mm-hmm. Patrick Nelson from the IFA. Again, it would require it would be a you know the local government, but obviously there would be the UK government are getting behind this bid, and there would be obviously, you know, with the four countries as such, you know, there would be a little bit of back and forth. But the fact that the GAA venue. Primarily as well, there's little political complications to the whole thing, but the timeline for this, lads, I don't think it's particularly favourable for getting it turned around for 2028. I don't think it's part of their plan. Like the one thing I would say as someone who's just, I just don't care about this bid really, but
Why don't you care about it?
I just don't think it's important. Like, if it happens, it happens. But it's just, it will do nothing for the game in this country at all.
We might not qualify as well.
It might be nice if it happens. And I say this, I think it would be nice if the Euros was here last summer. That would have been great.
England, Germany. Yeah.
It will do nothing for the game here. Really, you might get a payment afterwards, but it'll do nothing.
Will all the money, the millions that come into the exchequer from having matches here, be distributed to Irish football in any way?
Yeah, maybe. There's possible benefits, but they're not guaranteed benefits, so it doesn't just bother me. But what I would say on the flip side of that is, I think, you know, if you do a good job, but I think there's money that you would get, like, there's a possible payoff here. I do accept that. But what I would say is, in the context of why this bid is attractive, why Germany 2024 is attractive, we speak about the white elephant stadiums that have been built, like there's some of the Brazilian ones that are like knocked down or hosting truck racing or something. What you have is a scenario where, in fairness, the Premier League is amazing facilities, Scotland, Wales, Aviva is ready, Croke Park if needed is ready. These facilities are going to be used afterwards. No one's on about building a, I mean, there's probably some the World Cup bid, you did have sort of councillors coming out saying we need to build a 40,000 seater in Galway or something,
a spaceship,
you know what I mean, like let's just drop a dome into the, well, we have a dome actually over.
That's actually working.
We need domes everywhere. Let's build domes all around Ireland.
And always
for every tournament.
Parky Queeve anyway, so they can have Ed Sheeran gigs, JD. So
okay, yeah. We got it. Laura, we got to love you and leave you. Going to Burnley tomorrow, Laura, are you?
No, I don't go and watch the Dingles, I'm afraid.
Okay, I've no idea what you meant there.
If you're a Preston fan, they call them Dingles. God knows what they call us, but yeah.
Okay.
That was an Emmerdale reference there for a second.
Lara, it's
sort of is an Emmerdale reference, I think.
Yeah.
Lara, goodbye.
Cheerio.
That's Mark Lawrence in there.
References to soaps today, JD.
Yeah, well, we can have the Save Neighbours petition on 53106.
Our neighbours in a bit of butter.
Yeah. I think it's the Irish government or state or something that we want it, and I don't know what.
we've made a bid for neighbours, have we, as well? Oh, God.
Well, I always preferred it to Home and Away when I was younger.
If you told a couple of our politicians there'd be votes in it, they'd probably do a press release.
Okay, we got to take a break. 53106, we're back after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
You're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 7 on this extended show, because we're going to be all over the Six Nations, Ireland, France, from 4:45 in Paris. Brent Pope and Fiona Hayes will be analysing, and we'll have all the updates as well from Aisling O'Reilly in Paris. So be sure to stay with us until 7 o'clock this evening on News Talk. At the moment, it's Football Saturday, the earlier time of 2 to 4 today. Dan McDonnell and Johnny Ward still with us as we go through the League of Ireland predictions in a moment. Everton 2, Leeds 0 in the Premier League. Seamus Coleman on the mark for the Toffees, a much needed score at the moment for them. Watford 0, Brighton 0 with 38 minutes gone. It is also Brentford 0, Crystal Palace 0. Earlier on, Man United 1, Southampton 1. Jadon Sancho scoring for United, cancelled out by Che Adams in the second half. In the Championship, Huddersfield 0, Sheffield United 0 is a result. Barnsley 0, QPR 0 is the latest score. Latest score is Birmingham 1, Luton 0. Blackpool 0, Bournemouth 0. It is Hull 0, Fulham 0. Middlesbrough 1, Derby 0. It is Millwall 0, Cardiff 0. Also goalless between Nottingham Forest and Stoke and Peterborough and Preston. It is Reading 1, Coventry 0. You the goal scorer in League 1, was it, Dan?
Will Keane has scored a penalty for Wigan against Charlton.
After his brother scored.
Good point, yeah.
One all at the moment in that one.
Family, yeah.
We have, what, Sunderland, are they playing?
1-0 down, I think, the AFC Wimbledon, yeah.
It's one all now.
Oh, they've equalised, okay.
Equalised in Scotland in the Scottish Cup. Hearts 0, Livingston 0. Motherwell 1, Aberdeen 1. Partick Thistle 0, Dundee United 1. And St Mirren 1, Kelty Hearts 0. Rangers kick off against Annan at 5:30 in the Six Nations. Scotland lead Wales by 17 points to 14. We also have Ballyhale Shamrocks leading Ballygunner in the AIB All-Ireland Club Hurling Championship final by 10 points to 7 at half-time. So Shamrocks bidding for 3 in a row, 3 points clear. And in the Hurling League Group B of Division 1, Dublin 2-19, Antrim 2-15 in the closing stages at Corrigan Park. So lads, and the League of Ireland upon us next week. Dan, are Shamrock Rovers going to win the title again?
I think they probably will, yeah. I mean, they should do. I wasn't at the game last night. I'm not sure Johnny watched it, the President's Cup. I find any pre-season stuff, even early season games, can be very, in any league, you know, can be deceiving. But I think, you know, if you think about it, that they won the league comfortably last year. They've now added Jack Byrne to their squad, who was the best player in the league for the previous two seasons. You know, and it can be exceptionally good. Yes, they're maybe top heavy in certain departments, but you would think that if they performed close to their level, they should be the top team. I think what I'm looking forward to about this season is I think it should be a stronger field challenging them, as much as I believe that probably the team holding the trophy will be the same at the end of it. I think you have a situation where Derry City have strengthened considerably with four of the better players from Dundalk going there. Maybe people dipping in and out. I mean, Derry are now run by effectively a billionaire, so they're going to be financially secure and solid in the next couple of years. St Patrick's Athletic, who were second last year and did subsequently lose their manager, Stephen O'Donnell, but I think their owner didn't, Garrett Keller, didn't take too kindly to that scenario and is strengthening this year, you know, and has given their manager, Tim Clancy, the budget to sign a player like Owen Doyle, who's come in from League One and scored last night. So I think, you know, there's reason to be encouraged by the league. We mentioned Damien Duff earlier on. I think there's going to be a lot of storylines this year, which for me and anyone, and trying to get a wider audience to engage and talk with it, talk about it, I think it'll be good in that regard. But to answer your simple question, I still think there's one team that has a better squad than the others, and unless they have some kind of internal capitulation, which I would think is unlikely, I think they'll regain their crown.
Shamrock Rovers, Johnny, for you as well?
Yeah, but I have to say, now watching last night, if you were watching the President's Cup and you were hoping that somebody might challenge them, there were a lot of holes, and I was actually still surprised at Stephen Bradley after the game. He didn't exactly mince his words. He said it was a wake-up call. They could have lost 2 or 3 nil, nowhere near good enough in any shape or form. Now, I wasn't at the game, but it was a very, very bad night in Dublin. We trialled this kind of late night LOI, which kind of sounds like something that it isn't really. Late night LOI is actually
I have to say, the fact that Johnny Ward is
DJ
now,
Johnny Ward
is now, I think, sort of managing a Twitter account called Late Night LOI. I just feel like it could go be like sort of, you know, what was that, like Nighthawks back in the day, which is a very respectable program, obviously. Yeah. It was the Shea Healy one.
That's fantastic. But some of the, I was thinking more with Johnny as a DJ, kind of like, you know, like for all the tunes, you know.
Oh, God.
On Tivoli or something. Anyway, so the Late Night LOI was this kind of, I was saying to Nathan, it'd be great to have like a Friday kind of like reaction show on a Friday night, if not a phone-in show. And Nathan said, well, we should give this Twitter Spaces. I had no idea what this was, but we gave it a try last night and we had a great reaction to it, actually. It was really good fun. Dan phoned in on Twitter from his car on the way home from Cork.
I pulled over to the side of the road.
Yeah, sorry, that's a long story short as to why I wasn't at the game. But the weather was very bad, but like Rovers were really poor. And the one thing I would say is Stephen Bradley's kind of his time at Shamrock Rovers went from one kind of way to the other when Gavin Bazunu was given his debut, and ever since then Rovers have basically been really, really good. But they had goalkeeper problems, and I'm just not sure about Alan Manus. Like last season, he made costly mistakes that, you know, were unlike him. He's getting on a bit, but like I didn't think he was good last night either. And Ang, that the keeper Pats brought in alone, he didn't have a particularly good night either. But Rovers defensively, they didn't look good at all, and Pico Lopez didn't play ostensibly because he needs a break. And I'd be a slight concern with him as well that he's basically not had much of an off-season break at all because he's obviously been in ANC duty. But Rovers were poor. I have to say they were poor. They didn't deserve... I think Pats deserved to win the game. Owen Doyle, Dan's buddy, who he's done pieces with, he was really, really good. He got an opportunist goal that was a mistake from Manus, really, on a bad night. But Pats will take an awful lot from that game. And I was definitely encouraged because I don't think anyone apart from Shamrock Rovers fans.
Yeah, I just think there's danger in analysing a pre-season game. Though,
oh, definitely,
too much. Like the last season's President's Cup.
Yeah,
Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk drew. Dundalk won it on penalties. And I mean, Dundalk were fast. Like Abibi was one of the main men. I think just to break this debate down, like I think the situation with the League of Ireland this year, if we have listeners here from Dublin, they have great options on Friday nights this year. The problem is in the Premier Division, there's no team from Munster in it. You know, so There's a whole, as Johnny sort of touched on it earlier, there's a whole swathe of the country who we can say, yes, you know, you can go and watch Jack Byrne and Talla, Dawson Devoy for Bowes, who didn't go, look, really top player as well. Derry are going to be good to watch. You have the Damien Duff angle down in Shelburne. He might even, Johnny might even get to interview him afterwards and recreate their relationship.
Sure,
Stephen O'Donnell at Dundalk and that whole situation there, and them trying to be stable again. And then you have a situation, as you mentioned, where Pats, like, I think they have some, like, James Abankra is going to be there for the first 6 months of the season. If people want to go and watch him before he goes to Serie A, I think there's some other good young players at the club there. So you can really go out there and see players who are going to be a big part of Irish football's future, and also some players who are good to watch. So, and from that perspective, and Sligo Rovers will also say as well, they've lost some of the more exciting young players over the winter, but they're hoping to sort of replenish their squad as well too. So there's a lot to look forward to, but I suppose I am conscious that, like, you know, there's a whole part of the country there cut out, and to be a better National League, you wish that Cork, Waterford, Galway probably were, you know, okay, Treaty and Limerick are trying to get going again, that they had a representation too. Because, I mean, I'm down in Cork last night, there's a good crowd there for a pre-season game, yet they're in the first division. And I think to be a truly national league that grabs a national audience, you need a national spread, and that's obviously the one slight issue I would have in this season.
I should say, JD, I still think Shamrock Rovers will win the league, but, like, if you went on the betting this morning, Shamrock Rovers are 8-13, Pats are 8-1, and there was no way looking at it last night. Pats will lose Abankra in the mid-season break, but they have other players to come in, and they've actually depth in the team, and I think we might have a title race looking at last night. I just think Pats put it up. So it was their first game with a load of new players in. There was no way, like, they would not fear Shamrock Rovers playing them again, and that's why maybe Bradley was saying after match, this isn't good enough, and Derry have signed well, so I'm definitely more hopeful that there'll be a better title race than the last 2 years anyway, put it that way.
What about players to watch then, Dan? Who should be looking out for?
Yeah, I think I've touched on it there. I mean, the obvious ones are obviously, you know, Jack Byrne and Dawson Devoy at Bowes. Probably beneath the radar, I'm just trying to think. I think there's a young midfielder at St Pat's this season, Adam Murphy, who's, I think, 16, going on 17. I think he's won in the... probably in similar to Bankwa, I think by the end of the season there's going to be a lot of interest. There's Jamie Mullins at Bowes as well too, a young sort of player who's expected to join Brighton, or certainly go to, again, because of Brexit, in previous years he probably would have gone away earlier. I'm trying to think now, sort of go around the league and try and get a spread that's not just Dublin orientated. I mean, I think Derry City just have, like, Patrick McElhenney back there, Will Patching back there. I think they're just, Derry City are a team or a strong, we'll say Shelburne, Jack Moylan, who's going to be playing for them, and number 10 again, I'm going to go on the Dublin route. I mean, Finn Harps, for example, I'm trying to think of, like, other teams beyond it, but Finn Harps are sort of been signing lads at the last minute for something different. They have a Croatian striker, they have a sort of a there's a whole lot of different personalities coming in from outside the league, JD, to run in tandem with the good young players that we have here. But there was quite an exodus over the winter of, like, Johnny Kenny from Sligo Rovers, you've covered it here, Ross Tierney from Bowes, Killian Phillips from Drogheda, and it's hard to replace. Like, if you lose, you know, four or five of your best young players in the league, it's hard to just replace them just like that. And you're sort of waiting for some new personalities to develop across the year, and I think they will. But yeah, I do think there's going to be entertainment value. I think from the perspective of next weekend, even, there's full crowds from the start of the season.
Just on that, I know we talk about Tata Stadium being the best facility, but what's the best experience from a punter who's never gone to a League of Ireland game? And there are many of those.
Yeah,
to go to a match, like, whether it's the environment around it, some, you know, maybe good refreshment facilities and that kind of thing.
Well, you see, Daily Mount is a great Friday night, and look, Bowes have actually thrived from, like, marketing it as a night out, not just a football experience, like, as in, you know, the bars, some of the food. The place is, the ground itself is, it's falling apart a bit, and they're trying to sell a tape together in some respects, but it is a place with incredible history. So I still think, as a Friday night going to Bowes, it is a very good thing. You know, if you're out west, I mean, Sligo Rovers have a really good family environment, a really good sort of a good place to go that's more community orientated. And there's different personalities and different identities that different clubs have. Look, I'm interested to see Tolka again in the middle of Dublin. Hasn't necessarily had great crowds in recent years, but all of a sudden they're going to have like full houses. They've had to take out some of the seats again because the places, you know, the sections of it aren't fully safe. They need to do work around it to make it more habitable for bigger crowds going this year. There is something about, as much as we talk about modern stadiums, and that's what we have to aspire towards, and I'm not saying for 1 minute let's get nostalgic and keep the crappy ones, but there is something about some of the character of some of the grounds. Like even Pat's last year in the Cup semi-final against Dundalk, there was like 5,000 people there and it was brilliant. And what I would say is I think post-pandemic we're seeing this in all sports. I'm saying post-pandemic, we're still living with it, but in all sports you see some of the crowds, some of the GAA pre-season games were huge, you know. I think people have a huge appetite for live sport now after being locked in for such a period of time, and it's up to all the clubs here, rather than say complaining about people not going, it's to actually seize and capitalise. And to be fair, the anecdotal tales are season ticket sales are flying up. Like, I think it could be the best season for attendances in some time,
right?
And it's up to those clubs now to keep those people and not sort of make, you know, not sort of play the perm out on it and actually make their grounds as welcoming as they can do to keep those people coming back.
Okay, so Johnny, the players to watch out for and the experience to watch out for?
Yeah, it's probably what Dan says. Like, Daily Mount's a good night out. Tala is still a really good, like, when Tala's full, it's a good experience. Now, Tala itself, to go to a game, the area around the ground, doesn't have an awful lot going for it, I have to say. It's just kind of one of these new grounds, like, that's away from, we'll say, where the traditional Rovers grounds would have been. But player to look out for. I think Thomas O'Meara is going to have a very good season for Bowes. He started pre-season well. Jamie Mullins, obviously, for Bowes as well. Will Patching, I think, is going to go on to a new level back at Derry City. At Shamrock Rovers, and Mac, who didn't have a great game last night, but I think he'll have a good season. Alex Murphy at my own club, Galway United, as long as we have him, he's a star for the future. And just get to a game and see what you think. You know, I said this before, we've massive parts of this country that have no League of Ireland club and no League of Ireland club in the near future. They're talking about a third team next season. I know that the likes of Kildare are looking to get into back into the League of Ireland. There are places around the country that would like to get back in. We need that. We need a tiered structure that we have further representation across the country, because it's still a major issue, and I'd certainly hope that happens in the future. I think standard-wise we're on the up.
We'll get you out on a Friday night, JD, will we?
Yeah, look forward to it.
Where are we going to go? Where are we taking you for your match night experience?
You know what? We'll meet in the centre of Dublin and then you decide.
We'll get to Lewis and see what direction it takes.
We'll end up streaming it in a bar.
My father used to go to Shelburne Park for 30 years, three times a week. So if they played at Shelburne Park, I'd be a Shelburne man. But
back in Harold's Cross, where Pats used to play, you know, the dog track.
I think they won the league that season.
They did, yeah.
1990.
Dan touched on it there. Like, I'm massively nostalgic. And I love old grounds. Like, I don't really like the new sanitised grounds as much. We need to modernise facilities. Talca Park will be absolutely rocking next Friday. Rocking.
I think it'll be Pats I'll go to, because I like the area around there.
There's
a hostelry you frequent that's quite close to there. Do you want to give it some free publicity?
The old Royal Oak.
There'll be a far better atmosphere in Talca. The atmosphere in Talca for Damien Duff, and I know it's on TV, will be really, really good. It'll be better than Premier League games. I mean that. Like, Premier League is in general, Everton will be good. A lot of sanitised experience. There'll be an amazing atmosphere in Talca for the crowd that's there next Friday.
You can have both. It's like the Euro bid, Johnny. You can have both.
Absolutely, absolutely. If everyone in this country liked to go to an English game but went to the League of Ireland, we'd be in a great place.
Yeah, to do both. Go on Friday to a League of Ireland game and then get on the plane on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
This Eurobid is a waste of time, says one of our texters. What we should do instead is do up the League of Ireland grounds and then push the boat out, host an underage tournament like the Under-17 World Cup, which we would do really well.
Yeah, that's my philosophy. That's been my opinion for years. Go after an Under-21 tournament and do all our middle rank grounds up.
I think though for kids, like, it would be great for kids and for young fans to be able to go to games, like big games. We don't have many of them. Ireland games.
Yeah, but like, it's in 6 years' time, Johnny.
Poland, Sweden, in 6 years' time.
Well, something nice in 6 years' time. Again, I don't think the FAI we haven't necessarily touched on the strategic plan, but like their targets to 2025, if they hit some of the targets within that and particularly advance some of the facility ones, then yeah, I don't think people are going to have an issue with the 28 bid. It's just that if we're sitting here in 6 years' time with nothing done, but hey, we're going to inspire people by having a tournament that's gone in a month, that doesn't excite me.
Aaron Connolly has scored today, by the way, which is good news for him.
For Middlesbrough against Derby County, that is in the Championship. So look, also we've got a goal from Neil Mopay for Brighton. They lead 1-0 away to Watford.
Oh God, sorry Gilly, I got to mention Ebu Sele's performance during the week
for Derby.
I watched, there were three Premier League games on, but Derby were playing Hull, so there was a bit of an Irish interest. I hadn't really seen him play, and I was told he's a bit raw on the ball.
The 3-1 down, by the way.
He's injured. He has a hamstring injury, so he's on the bench.
Okay, he was absolutely brilliant. I presume he got mad at the match. He was absolutely brilliant. He was so dynamic on the ball. And I know we haven't touched on Anthony Barry today and Stephen Kenny's quest for a replacement, but whoever replaced him, they'll be excited about this lad going forward.
30 seconds, Dan. Could anything have been done differently?
With Anthony Barry? I don't really believe so, no. I think Anthony Barry was probably always on the clock here.
Right, okay.
And Belgium, the World Cup is next December. Who knows? Anthony Barry could be managing by the time the Euros campaign starts. It's not great. It's not ideal to lose him. Let's not try and put a glass half full slant in it. It's a blow, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the scenario would have ended any differently, really. Yeah.
Dan and Johnny, thanks so much for this afternoon.
Thanks, Judy.
Thanks.
Football Saturday between 2 and 4 this week, because we're with the rugby between now and 7 o'clock. We've got Ashley and O'Reilly in Paris, got Brent Pope coming into studio. We also have Fiona Hayes. We're all over Ireland against France in the Six Nations, which kicks off at 4:45 here and Off the Ball. We're right until 7 on your radio news talk. Please stay with us. Thanks.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, Scottish Premiership, and much more live on Sky Sports.